Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello and welcome to Lost in Science Summer Series. Yeah, that is right. The Lost in Science crew are on a much needed rest. Rest from science? I don't know. I don't know if science ever takes a rest, but certainly rest from producing brand new science stories for you. And so we have our summer series where we take some of our favourite stories from the past year or two or however long ago our memory stretches back and bring them back for your listening pleasure. And this week I have one from 2025, which, you know, it's in the rearview mirror now. It's in the distance, 2025. But this researcher's work is not in the rearview mirror and definitely deserves another time in the spotlight. It is my interview with the 2025 Young Australian of the Year, Dr. Katrina Ruck. And if you didn't hear it the first time, definitely stay tuned to listen to this interview, because Katrina is an absolute powerhouse of a researcher. She is a green chemist and does incredible work problem solving and coming up with innovative solutions for environmental issues, like developing ways to break down forever chemicals like PFAS using chemistry, and developing cheap laundry materials and using mining byproducts. And as she told me, also the first Torres Strait Islander to win any category of Australian of the Year. And she took out that honour for Young Australian of the Year in 2025. So definitely stay tuned for Katrina and have a listen, because it's some fascinating stuff. All right, on with the show, and hope you are having a wonderful and safe summer.
Our guest this week is someone who's changing the way we think about science and sustainability. Dr. Katrina Ruck is a pioneering green chemist, research fellow and lecturer at the Queensland University of Technology with ancestral ties to Mabiag Island, and is this year's Young Australian of the Year and first Torres Strait Islander to win the prize in any category. Just some of the things she has put her hand to include working out a way to break down forever chemicals and using green chemistry to tackle some of our toughest environmental problems. And now we have her with us on the show. Katrina, welcome to Lost in Science.
Thanks so much for having me here.
To start with, congratulations on becoming Young Australian of the Year. What a huge achievement. Can you take us back to what led you to a career in science and green chemistry?
Yeah, so I think I was always interested in problem solving. My parents tell me I was always doing puzzles from a really, really young age, like 2, and progressively getting harder and harder. And then I guess that progressed into Lego, and I was doing a lot of Lego, particularly Harry Potter Lego, which was all the rage back then. I mean, it still is, really. And I had a really great chemistry teacher, and she was also a doctor, but she specialized in forensics and chemistry. And that gave me a really good opening, I guess, to go into chemistry. And I guess my love for chemistry started in high school. And when I did the QTAC application to go into university, I didn't think twice about what I wanted to do. I knew it was chemistry.
Wow. It shows you the power and impact of a good teacher, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And people were asking me, are you doing chemistry to get into medicine? Like, is this a stepping stone to get into something else? But I just knew. I was like, no, I'm doing this because I love chemistry. Chemistry is amazing.
Yeah, so let's go to the chemistry. So for listeners who might not know, what exactly is green chemistry and why is it such an important area of research today?
So green chemistry is about applying sustainability principles to chemistry. In chemistry, you make all kinds of different materials or any cancer drugs or coatings, anything like that. That's all chemistry. But when we look at that kind of innovation, you can do it using the existing methods, and a lot of them are using plastic or those kind of derivatives from fossil fuel, or was originally a fossil fuel and it's been refined into a plastic. You can actually use biopolymers instead. So it's about swapping out something that is not great for the environment and swapping it out with something that is sustainable, renewable, and then also trying to recycle chemicals as much as you can. In a lot of these processes, you can actually recycle the fluid that you're doing a reaction in. That's another way you can contribute to green chemistry. And also thinking about the whole of the chemical you're using from a life cycle perspective. How much energy does it take to create this chemical or material, including the transport, the energy required to make it, the facilities, and then at the end of its life, what happens to it? What happens to these chemicals and materials? People are starting to think more about that now, which is really, really great.
It sounds like an incredibly innovative area of research.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's definitely challenging the status quo because we know that we can get great materials using the current methods, which is using plastics, for example, and then trying to get the same kind of quality and properties using a biopolymer can be really challenging. So it's definitely something that's still emerging in its field, but it's going to be really, really important as we move forward into a greener future, I certainly hope.
So we've talked a bit about green chemistry. Let's talk about your research. I mentioned in the intro, you've developed a way to break down PFAS, so those forever chemicals. So can you tell us a bit more about this research, what you're doing, and what the results are?
I'm sure everyone's heard of PFAS now, or at least forever chemicals. Essentially, they are a hydrocarbon, so they're a chain of carbon molecules, but instead of having hydrogen, it's actually got fluorine instead. And because of that, it's actually a very strong chemical bond. So that carbon fluorine bond does not break down very easily. So in the environment, what that looks like is it takes 1,000 years for it to start degrading, which is a very, very long
wow.
time. Yeah. So there are a few methods that are currently being used. One of them is burning the PFAS, but that has issues because when you burn it, the chemicals are more reactive because they're being burned at a high temperature. So they actually break bonds and form new bonds, and then you get different PFASs being formed. And you've also got methods to remove PFAS using ion exchange resins, but removing it isn't really what we need. What we need is destruction. We need to actually destroy these bonds to prevent them from spreading in the environment, which they do very, very rapidly and very widely. They've even been found in places like the middle of Antarctica and in animals where, you know, people haven't even been around those areas, but the animals are still contaminated with them. And that's because of the way PFAS moves in the environment. So I've developed a process which is essentially a special kind of reactor that uses electricity to start a chemical reaction between a cathode and an anode, which is like a positive and a negative terminal. And inside that reactor, a very special reaction happens where these very excited molecules are created, and they just kind of bump around into things. And when they bump into things, they have the ability to break those bonds. So it is a really, really great area to be in, to be developing materials to put inside this reactor to accelerate the reaction, and doing so in a way using green chemistry as well. I wouldn't just use a plastic. I would try and use something else. So I'm creating geopolymers. So geopolymers are essentially, it's kind of like a plastic, but made from rocks. And it's got a tunable structure, so you can actually tune the properties for what you're trying to do specifically.
And what do you hope the impacts will be from this process that you've been developing?
At the moment, my reactor is a benchtop system, and because it uses really low energy, it has a really good ability to be able to be deployed in remote areas because of the low energy consumption. So the whole idea was that this could be put in a community that has PFAS contaminated water, and it could run off solar power and would be able to destroy these harmful contaminants in the water. And, you know, if all goes well, it would be great to see it rolled out into households as well.
Is there anything else happening like this in the world right now?
There has been a startup, a company that has come out with a water purification system similar to what I'm using. But I think that, there are some, you know, differences in how you can use the technology, specifically in what you're breaking the PFAS down into. Ideally, you would completely destroy it into carbon dioxide and fluorine atoms, but we have to have a way of recapturing that fluorine. And that is a really big job, you know, trying to capture that fluorine back. And you can do that in a number of ways. I'm currently looking at using calcium carbonate, something like that, to bind up all the fluorine that comes out from the reactor.
I mean, I feel like there's no shortage of calcium carbonate around.
Yeah, it's a very abundant material, fortunately. So we're lucky in that respect, yes.
So you've also been working with zeolites, which are byproducts from mining sites, to create eco-friendly laundry solutions. Can you tell us how these zeolites work and what impact they can have?
Yeah, absolutely. So the natural zeolite dust is formed during the processing of natural zeolite. It's mined out of the ground for a number of uses, like they use it in slow-release fertilizers and swimming pool filters. The natural zeolite has amazing properties as it is, but it's quite inexpensive. It's very abundant. And it doesn't work as well as synthetic zeolite. So what I've been able to do in my work is essentially take the rock and then break it apart into the building blocks and then reconstruct those building blocks at an atomic level into the main ingredient in laundry detergent. So if you think of a construction site, if you take apart a building and then you rebuild it, it's kind of the same thing. You're using the same elements. You're just putting it together in a different way.
I mean, I know we're a science show, but what you were describing, it sounds a little bit like magic.
Yeah, so this process had been done before, but the difference is with my process, again, green chemistry, sustainability focused, I found a way to do the reaction at a really low temperature. So previously, this reaction has been done at around 600 degrees Celsius, but I could do it in a household oven.
So, wow, should we be expecting cheaper laundry powders from this research?
Yeah, so I used that the research I did, and I created a company, Nuki Kula Green Labs. Nuki Kula means water stone in Kalalagul Ya, which is the language of the Western Torres Straits. But I would really like to help consumers and help communities to have laundry facilities where they may not have had them before. So creating a reusable laundry system is the main goal of what I'm trying to do, because the current laundry practices are very wasteful, especially liquid detergents. You've got a lot of water in there. And then in the powders, there's fillers. So everything you put in your washing machine ends up going down the drain into wastewater treatment facilities. But imagine if we could halve the amount of waste we're putting down the drains in terms of powders or detergents. It would actually remove a lot of the strain on wastewater treatment facilities to remove all those chemicals that are in laundry detergents. Mm-hmm. So it's providing a sustainable alternative that's cheaper for consumers and that's better for the environment, and also less hassle at the wastewater treatment plants for them to have to deal with all these chemicals in the water.
And have you been trialing this in communities as of yet?
We're still in the research and development stage, but I'm very much already working with community organisations to help fulfil their needs. Anything like this that will be deployed in an Indigenous community needs to be co-developed, you know, and co-determine what their needs are. If it's going to be successful, they need to be involved in the process.
Yes. So what are the issues that are facing remote Indigenous communities that this research and these green laundry powders will prevent?
So a lot of Indigenous communities have health-related issues related to inequitable access to laundry facilities for a number of reasons. So when you're in a remote community, it's really expensive to get anything shipped out there. So a laundry machine, we take for granted, you can buy it, you can get it delivered. You can't do that in a remote community. It's very expensive, even in the supermarkets, to buy laundry detergent, to the point where you would rather put food on your table to feed your family than buy laundry detergent. But what ends up happening is there's a bacteria called Streptococcus aureus, and it's quite a nasty bacteria. And what happens is the bacteria goes into someone's cut or open wound, and it spreads from person to person very easily. Once the bacteria is in your system, and if it goes untreated over a few different exposures, it actually leads to rheumatic heart disease, which is a disease of poverty that only affects Indigenous people in Australia. I think the statistic was 94% Indigenous people were diagnosed. So it's an issue of equity. And rheumatic heart disease is not a great outcome, really. So that actually leads to people having heart attacks at very young ages, as young as, you know, 10 or 12. You know, you can have young people dying of heart attacks, which is not good enough, really, for a first world country. So this is one of the ways that we can help prevent strep from spreading is by washing linen and clothes and these things that communities just don't have access to, and doing that in such a way that it's cheap or free and cost effective, using minimal water, solar powered, all these kinds of really good things.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
Science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far?
Yes, you are listening to Lost in Science on the Community Radio Network. And coming up is the second part of an interview with Young Australian of the Year and Green Chemist, Dr. Katrina Ruck. So, Katrina, as Young Australian of the Year, what would you like to see change in the way Australia approaches science education and research?
So in Australia, I think we don't invest a lot of money in research and development, and I'm a firm believer that we should. We are faced with so many different problems or challenges as, you know, on a national level, we're talking about building nuclear power plants or solar power powering the grid. But there are so many other ways that we can approach these issues. And the real solutions come out of research and development. And we need to be investing more into that, because that's where the real solutions come out of. And what we can actually do as a nation is, when we discover something new, you can actually patent it and you can license the technology to other countries and create a passive income. And that is something that we haven't leveraged. And I think that we really should. We have a lot of amazing universities and institutions with top shelf scientists, engineers who have an amazing history of innovation and are unable to commercialize it because of the restrictions. And particularly in research, the contract-to-contract system is really prohibitive of getting people to stay in research. A lot of the times researchers will leave into industry because the conditions are better, they have a permanent job. And yeah, I really think we need to do more in that area, very much so.
And what advice would you give to young people, especially young First Nations people who may be dreaming of a career in science?
My advice for young people is to follow your dreams, no matter what people tell you. I've had people tell me that I wasn't going to succeed, that my business would fail, that I would never learn to read, that I was told that I wasn't allowed to study math, the hard math that I wanted to study. My advice is not to let anyone's opinions of what you're capable of stop you from following your dreams, because the only one who can make it happen or not make it happen is you. At the end of the day, you've got to find the way to make it happen and find your people who will support you. And those people really should, in my case, those people believed in me more than I believed in myself. And that became a self-fulfilling prophecy where I kept doing better and better because I believed them. And here we are.
Now, given your work co-developing alongside Indigenous communities, what are the lessons and advice you give to other researchers on how to work respectfully with Indigenous communities?
If you're a researcher or a science, engineering, STEM professional looking to work with communities, there are a number of ways you can go about doing that. And in doing so, you're actually going to be inspiring the next generation of what is possible. So I recommend CSIRO STEM professionals in schools, and what they can do is link you up with a remote school and you can zoom in to their classroom and develop a relationship with them through that mechanism. There's also Solid Pathways, which is a Queensland education initiative. It's a little bit hard to kind of cold call a community. It's better if you're introduced through a mechanism that exists already. But the conversations that you have can be life-changing for these students. And when I talk about my journey into, you know, becoming an academic and growing up in the conditions that I did, you know, it's very important they hear those stories of resilience and not just focus on what went well, the successes, but focus on the challenges as well and show them how you came through those challenges and came out the other side with a better perspective.
And what do you think needs to change in our curriculum to further embed Indigenous perspectives and Indigenous knowledge systems?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of teachers are unsure or afraid of getting it wrong when they try to embed Indigenous perspectives in the curriculum. But there are some great resources that are available online to help with this. I was actually involved in this as well. The Australian Council for Deans of Science just released a framework to assist people to embed Indigenous knowledges in STEM curriculums. So that's a really great resource.
Dr. Katrine Ruck, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your incredible work, your passion and commitment to improving life for all Australians, especially in remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. We can't wait to see what you do next. And best of luck for the rest of the year.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's all we have time for on this episode of Lost in Science for our summer series. We'll be back with you for a whole new year of Lost in Science goodness from February. So stay tuned when the gang, Chris, Stu, Lyndon and Claire get back together. But for the next 3 weeks, we will be bringing you some of our favourite Lost in Science stories for your listening pleasure. Also, a big thanks again to Katrina Ruck for the interview that she did earlier this year. It was great to hear it again and revisit it, and looking forward to hearing what's next for Katrina's research. Lost in Science is recorded on the lands of the Kulin Nations and the lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network, with the kind support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. If you'd like to get in contact with us, we'd love to hear from you, especially at the start of the year. You might have some ideas for some stories that you want us to investigate. Drop us a line at lostinsight@gmail.com. If that's the case, that's the best place to find us. Or you can just tune in wherever you listen to us, whether that's on podcast, maybe it's on your local community radio station, but wherever it is, you will hear Claire, Lyndon, Stu and Chris get lost in science.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.